evening, everyone, and welcome to Holy Crap Vlogcast. Vlogcast that was started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect, because somebody on Facebook said, stop posting all this crap about, you know, logical stuff and telling us that we're saying things wrong because we're just having fun here. That's what we're using it for. You're not supposed to use it for what you want to use it for. We want to use it for what we want to use it for. So this vlogcast is basically just here to try to answer the questions of why. Because sometimes the destination isn't nearly as impressive as the journey. I am known as Shujin Tribble. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island to a Roman Catholic family. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and an atheist. I was going to say unabashed. I was going to say born again, but I guess that doesn't really quite qualify. I've got a few people who are going to be joining us this evening, and we're working on a couple of techie issues as we're going along. Joining this evening is Unrenowned Tech.
Oh, that's me. Hi. I live in Southern Maryland. I was raised in a mixed religious background. Nothing was really shoved down my throat. I was encouraged to be a free thinker, which I am proud to say I am. I am an atheist. And we did indeed evolve from filthy monkey men. Oh, wait, this is the wrong show. I couldn't help it.
Also joining us tonight is Joe.
Yo. 8-year veteran of the United States Army, was active duty.
Thank you, sir.
Honorably separated. Discharged, really. Born in Chicago, Illinois. Raised in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, Ohio. Raised Roman Catholic. Currently atheist.
And also rounding out the group tonight is, well, even though it says Kriana, I refer to him as Rithnook because that's what he likes to go by.
Yep, that would be me. I am Rithnook Flamster. I've currently been in the Canadian Forces now for the last 16 years. Started in the active infantry for about 8. Sustained an injury to my ankle and spent the last 8 years as an RMS clerk and currently now in the Chief Financial and Administrative NCM at my unit. Other than that, I spent many years where I met Shujin at Fernal Equinox as the 2IC of security, and currently am the director of oversight for the convention. Thanks for having me.
No worries. You're in a special position because of recent events for you. You are work out to be just a perfect sounding board on this one. It is May 18th, 2014. Tonight we're going to be talking about woo-woo, which in this case means medical stuff, and as some people have called it woo, some call it woo-woo. And it's going to be a combination of talking about medicine, alternative medicine, homeopathy, vaccination, anti-vaccination, and all stuff up and down the board. So there are going to be a lot of things that we're going to end up talking about one way or another. If you're joining us... Oh, there you go. If you're joining us live, please, by all means, feel free to take advantage of the question and answer system that we have over on the page. And if you are watching after the fact, please, by all means, feel free to drop me an email message if you have questions, comments, or ideas for future topics for us to cover. And you can hit me as shujintribble@gmail.com, just the way you see it spelled on the screen, just with no spaces. I want to start off with one of the more contentious things, which is... I got into this has got nothing to do with this for a second, but just want to do this one real fast. Got into a discussion on Facebook because somebody had posted a variation, or so he claimed, on the Pascal's wager question. If you as an atheist are right and I'm wrong, I lived a good life and everything was nice for me, but if you're wrong and I'm right, what then? And it became a whole thing where a lot of people actually came out and said, well, you know, this really doesn't work. This is not a good argument. I mean, why are you charting? I'm going to be channeling the guys from Merseyside Skeptics, which, by the way, guys, thank you very much for... Why would you go trotting out a shit argument like that, man? There's no reason to do that. And And it was gratifying to not be the first one to say, that's crap, man. Don't do that. But it was entertaining because someone white knighted and came out and is all Christian, ho, let's go. And I've been very nice about the exchange and basically laid out my stuff. And I've been completely above board, an absolute gentleman the whole time. And Betty, I do not know if you will ever see this. Very likely not. But Betty, if you do, I want you to know, I do sincerely hope that you read over the stuff that I posted again and don't dismiss it completely out of hand without thinking about it at all. I don't type because I want to. I type because I think it's worthwhile. The same as what you do. But what seems to be the difference is I'm willing to listen. Can you do the same? Now that is out of the way and my personal stuff is gone over here, I think one of the things that we should tackle right off the bat is probably vaccination, because there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on recently. I'm gonna take it over to you first, Joe, because both you and Rithi have had to deal with this before. Being in the forces, when you guys leave or when you first get in, I'm assuming you guys get a battery of medical stuff, including vaccinations, left, right, center, and you've complained about that kind of stuff before. I'm wondering what kind of stuff you can remember having been filled full of.
Well, you get your typical battery, most of the stuff that you'd expect a child to get, they give it to you just to make sure that you've had it, unless, of course, you have a medical records showing that you've had it. The one that sticks in my memory most often, though, is what they call the anthrax vaccination. And it's a 7-part vaccination that you're supposed to get over the course of 3 years.
Wow.
And it is not tested. At the time that I was in, it was not FDA approved.
You were the guinea pig.
That's what the military is. And to try to tell them, no, I'm not going to have this, would be disobeying a lawful order. So options were limited, to say the least. On top of that, there have now it's a 7-part vaccination, but this is the military. And the military, like anything else in the government, is at its core a bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that one piece of paper passes through, 1,000 different hands before it's actually done and over with. Which is, 1,000 different hands that it can get fumbled on. That 7-part vaccination I was supposed to have ended up being 28 shots. I got the first shot probably some 5 times, and each successive shot I've had at least twice.
So in other words, you're really, really, really vaccinated against anthrax now.
That's the thing. Anthrax.
You're like the walking anthrax shield. Can I use you in my D&D game?
My concern is more along the lines of I'm now what you could call a carrier.
Possibly.
Who knows? One of these days I might just start sweating off anthrax compound. But aside from the fact that this thing was untested when they gave it to us, it was it's been in use pretty much since. I won't say that it's untested, but they've been using it since Desert Storm without knowing everything about it, without knowing the long-term effects. And we now have service members coming out
saying that, you know, there's a possible causal link between this immunization and some rampant cases of cystic fibrosis, various kinds of cancer.
Jesus, that can get all kinds of hellacious. Rithi,
you get anthrax.
There is that. Rithi, I want to bring it over to you at this point then to try to find out what was your experience like with the forces for vaccinations and such? I'm assuming that you guys also would have gone into stuff first coming in and going, being deployed and such too.
Very simply, there's a big difference between the U.S. and the and Canadian forces when it comes to vaccination.
A lot of things.
But honestly, I kind of chuckled when he said, you know, you've got a 7-part shot for anthrax, because our standard batteries are your DPT, polio, freaking Hep A, B, and C, you know, all that great stuff. There is, in the Canadian forces, we do what's called theater specific, right? So in that particular case, what happens is you get vaccinated going into, depending upon where you're going, not necessarily just, oh, we're going to vaccinate you from God. That one. When I had my needle parade, as we call it, I had something like, in the course of a week, I had something like 37 different shots, and generally. But it's like inoculations to everything, right? My view differs a bit on it when it comes to like the side effects and stuff like that, because they won't, in Canada, they just won't. They won't test bed something in the military. And the reason they won't do that is because the Canadian Forces is a direct relation of the societal values of Canada itself. Therefore, they can't test those sort of things in the military because of the fact that every single member of the military doesn't forego their rights, doesn't forego their ability to say, hey, you know what, bugger off, I'm not getting that because the science isn't there and it's not approved for use by the regular populace. So, ha! Blow me. That does give you the opportunity to say, no, this is an unlawful command. As Joseph was saying, you know, his experience was that it was tantamount to saying, you know, it was tantamount to disobeying a lawful command. However, in Canada, to place somebody in a choice of physical risk, it is no longer a lawful command to so order somebody to take that risk. And that's kind of where it differs. But that really has been my experience. In Canada, there isn't much of an issue if you say, ha, not happening. Like, I don't get the flu shot. There's a good example. I don't get the flu shot in the course of a year because I understand the ideas behind immunization. Immunization is a crapshoot. They turn around and they say, these is what we've seen are the big flu strains this year, so we're going to inoculate people for these four top. Right? Bam! Hit you. Then you get nailed with the worst freaking flu you've ever had, and you go, why doesn't this work? Right? It's a crapshoot, and in my particular opinion, once you get the flu, you're not getting it again. Right? And your immunity slowly degrades over the course of an 8-year period. Therefore, getting immunized each freaking year doesn't necessarily increase your ability to be able to resist as much as it does, hey, check it out, we got the right ones this year, right? So, and that's where I normally come from.
Now, for the two of you guys, obviously that is professional, so to speak, because, I mean, let's face it, at the time when you're in the military, that is your profession. That is what you're eating and sleeping, same as what everybody else would be going into work you guys are effectively living it at the time. Now, for Tech and me, it's a little bit different, so I'm going to bring it over to you for a sec, Tech, because now for childhood immunizations, I'm sure that you've had the opportunity of hearing about what the school districts would be saying, and you have to have this, you have to have that, you're going into this grade, you need to have those, unless you've got some kind of a special exemption for... I guess where I want to go on this one at this point is... looking, have you had any kind of interactions with other parents, other students and teachers who've made any kind of reference to people who have not had specific early immunizations for their kids?
Not a lot of interactions. Not most of them, not noteworthy. For the most part, all I've really heard were people saying, you know, why didn't you get your kids, why wouldn't people get their kids vaccinated? Don't they love them? Or some variation of that of, you know, why don't you get your kids vaccinated because you're putting my kids in harm's risk? Because that's the truth. You know, just because your kids got vaccinated doesn't mean the other kid who didn't can't still infect them. And we're actually seeing cases of that. And it's not common, but it does happen, and that's the problem. People don't realize that if everybody gets vaccinated against a particular nasty little bug, it doesn't mean that nobody's going to get it and it's going to die out. It just means it lowers the risk of the people who will get it, getting it, for whatever reason, whether their immune system doesn't accept the vaccination fully, so it doesn't create a full resistance effect against it, whatever the scientific terms against it are. I'm sorry, but I'm a layman. I don't know viruses and things like that well. That was not my field of study. Mine were machines. And last time I checked, you can't get a virus from a computer.
Not the same way.
Not yet.
Practicing safe things.
Yeah. As long as you cover your internet connection with it. Well, never mind. We've all seen the picture.
Remember, folks, be careful with that dongle. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't know where that port's been. Anyway.
They call it an I.O. for a reason. God, what?
An I.O. again and again and again. But I haven't heard anybody say, oh, you got your kid vaccinated. Wow, you know, you're really taking a risk there. Despite where I live, I'm not actually hearing that. There's a lot more sensibility in terms of dealing with viruses and things like that where I live here in Southern Maryland, and I'm really grateful that most of the people down here have that attitude. And, you know, just for people who don't have children and can't remember their own childhood, I actually had to pull up my my son's vaccine history because there's a particular camp I'd like to put him in, and most camps will actually ask for a copy of the vaccine report, you know. And what they're really looking for is their latest tetanus shot. But in some cases, more than that, it depends on the camp itself and what their activities are. So I'm counting this up, the type of vaccines that he has. And now please understand that some of these are booster shots to, like, Rory, or I can't say the name. Sorry, but Rory, for now, was saying that after about 8 years, it starts to die down. That's what the booster shots are for. Most adults remember at some point getting a booster to their tetanus shot, unless they missed it, in which case then they get the full blow, and that one hurts even more. So he's had this is not me adding up the dosage. This is me counting the times that he's had to go in and get shots. He's 8 years old, mm-hmm. 19 times that he's had shots. So some of those visits had two or three or four shots at once because they can be not necessarily combined in the shot, but they can be given on the same day. And other ones probably not so much. It's like the flu shot. You know, if you go in and get the flu shot, first off, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's a guesstimate. It's a scientific guesstimate, which I would put a lot more credence into than putting my a guesstimate into religion, because there's a science and there's a formula behind it, and it's based on past variations of the flu, what the patterns they've seen in the past. You know, there's all predictive models and everything else, but at the end of the day, it is still a guesstimate. And they tell you, you know, if you're going to get it like the end of the week. That way you have the weekend to recover, because a really good vaccination is going to produce an effect. You're not going to feel well. And that is your body fighting off the vaccination. Now, vaccination is, my understanding as a layman, is typically one of two types. There's either where a little bit of the material is still alive, but it's been heavily weakened, so that somebody who's not immune against it can fight it and then develop their immunity, or
right,
hope that they'll develop a full immunity. Or it's completely dead, but the body will still recognize as an invader and develop the resistance to it.
Right.
And I was listening to The Thinking Atheist. Yes, I've got to give the props out here, because this is where I heard it. And in one of his older episodes, he was actually talking to somebody who is very interested in biology and viruses and all that, and actually understands that stuff, is a scientist, all that fun stuff. And she was talking about how a lot of the people who are anti-vaxxers or anti-vaccinations are looking at the ingredients and they're getting scared, because they see, oh, there's embryos in there, human embryos, and then there's these chemicals where if you put them in your body, you're going to die. And what she was saying is that they found, first off, when they say human embryos, they're talking about like maybe a couple of the cells from an embryo, okay? And they didn't go and look, you know, and go, you need to have an aborted fetus so we can make a vaccination. It doesn't work that way, okay? Don't believe it or not, people, women donate their eggs to science. There are women who do that. There are men who donate their sperm to science, okay? People donate their whole corpse to science so that we can find out cures and things like that. And as for those chemicals, they find that when they mix them together in certain ways, they get a better environment for that virus or whatever that's been killed or crippled to as a solution that should be put in, so your body produces a better reaction against it. So what they're doing is they're actually making your body stronger.
Right.
Okay. So it's one of the few cases where you'll actually hear about putting something harmful in your body to actually make your body stronger. And I know it doesn't sound like it works, but it does. It really does. And I have one of as a kid, I had one of the very old style flu shots. I don't typically catch the flu, because a lot of the current flus that we've had, for people like me, who's had a really great reaction again with that old style flu shot, we're not as susceptible to the current flu strains that have been going around.
Yeah. Now, the way that you were just describing it, that's actually going to kind of dovetail into where it's going to be taking this. But there are a couple people who are watching right now, and I want to thank you guys, especially Witchy Bunny. You take care of yourself, kid. You know, we're just hoping that you're staying safe out there. And I'm not going to use the whole joke, but as I told Unrenowned Tech, I'm not quite sure where you're currently positioned on the automobile that you're in, so I hope things are going well for you.
Remember, and taser in the left hand, mace in the right.
Great. And Rith, I don't know if you've got the Q&A system up and available for you over there, but we do have a question for you directly. I don't know if you'd seen it or how you'd like to respond to it. Or are you even... I've got you muted at the moment, it looks like.
Or he might have muted himself. If you move your cursor to the left of the screen, a little bar should pop up, and there should be a little icon that says Q&A. If you click it, it'll load a bar, and you'll see a window open on the right-hand side. And then you'll be able to see the question section.
Ooh!
I'm true tech. I just taught somebody something new today.
Yep. So Stephen is listening and watching at the moment and is asking, whereabouts in Canada are you? That he's over in London. And by the way, thank you. I keep forgetting I have to keep switching the camera over here. By the way, thank you for watching from over there. We appreciate it. London is a wonderful area. Had the opportunity of driving through it several times so far, so that's good. Rithi, I don't know howabouts you'd like to go ahead and put that out.
I'm in the center of the universe. That's the best way to describe where I am right now. Because wow, only people in Ontario would know where the heck I am.
Okay. I've got a fairly decent idea as to where that could be. All I can guess is that you're probably speaking the wrong language is what it comes down to, eh?
Yes, in some cases. Actually, I'm in Toronto at the moment, and oh, looks like Rini's saying hi. Hey, Rini, what's up?
That's Witchy Bunny.
Oh, hey, Witchy.
So that works out well. So we've got folks from well, it's nice now because we had Jake over in Australia. We've got you over there in the Rithi centric universal focus.
Susan, don't feel bad. I live in my own little universe, but it's okay. Everybody here knows me.
Ken. And those that don't have been exiled to the dark side of the moon.
Hey, join the dark side. We have cookies and Elvira.
That is actually really that's
All right.
So the piece that you were just talking about, where putting something nasty into your body in order to help it, is not a bad way of looking at what medicine is, regardless of if it's homeopathic or if it's quote-unquote traditional medicine. And by traditional meaning, it's been tested and shown that it actually works and does what it claimed to work.
I do just want to interject on one thing. One of the things that's really funny about medical science is the fact that they try to play up the nobility of it while pushing aside or piling on top of the origins of how their medicines, how a lot of medicines are developed. Sorry, not developed, how they're discovered. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really caught my brain with a whole bunch of holy shit was reproductive medicine. Reproductive medicine, very interestingly, especially when you talk about female anatomy and stuff like that, oddly enough, there's a lot of unethical procedures that were taken on in the sake of curiosity by Jack the Ripper, which actually is recorded in medical history as being one of the precursors to women's health with relation to reproductive therapies. Scary enough to think about that when you understand the history of the individual. But it's one of those things that again, it's like, oh, well, we know all this stuff about, you know, women's health. But at the same time, the origin of which is very dark and gruesome to begin with. But
you want dark and gruesome? The experiments that the Nazis performed on their... on the Jews as well as other various captives, it goes way beyond the crimes against humanity.
I agree.
The significant portion of the world's knowledge of the human anatomy and the various biological sciences that we have dealing with our anatomy are known because of what the Germans did during the war.
And it's scary, like when you think about that, that's exceedingly scary stuff. But then let's come forward to the modern day and suggest the idea of stem cell research, right? This is effectively the same sort of thing, albeit not as gruesome and dark as the more invasive things that were done throughout history just for the sake of, we're curious, I wonder what happens if, right? And that's exactly what happened with the Nazis. The Nazis said, I wonder what happens. And the thing is that they didn't have the moral barrier or the ethical barrier to restrict him. So they said, screw it.
I wouldn't compare stem cell research with the Nazis, because the reason why stem cell research got banned was people were afraid, a lot of religious people were afraid, that it was going to promote abortions.
You're absolutely right there. But what I'm saying, the reason I equate the two is just from the idea of the uncharted waters of which are tread into in the sake of furthering science and in the furthering of medical knowledge. The problem here is that society's not ready for this sort of thing, right? Society says no. This is bad, you know, this is why, right? But it also is partly, if not majorly, pushed by the religious agenda, which I can understand but don't necessarily agree with.
Right. Yeah, and that's something that really came to it. One of the earliest that I can recall off the top of my head, I don't remember if it was Hippocrates himself, but there were a lot of the ancient Greeks, as I recall, who wanted to understand a lot more about the human body, and they were the first ones that were really going against the whole body taboo of what's inside of the dead body. And, you know, it was a cultural taboo that your dead body is sacrosanct and you don't do anything with it. And started to really investigate and understand and document and sketch out. But what the you're quite right, Tech. What the Nazis were doing truly qualifies as inhuman and barbaric in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, we have to kind of take a sit back and go, you know, we wouldn't do that now, but we've got the information to work with. Might as well use it.
And that's where the point comes in, is that I suspect to find that over the next 50, 100 years, you're going to see something like that, not on the same grand scale, but you'll probably see stuff like that occur again. Because of the simple fact that you can only learn so much before you have to go somewhere to be able to learn more. And it's kind of scary to think about it, but I suspect it will occur again, albeit on a much minor scale. But again, you're going to come back to the whole, well, I can't believe this actually happened, but we've got the info, might as well use it.
Well, that's the other thing. You do have people out there going, no, we shouldn't use it because we have it. And it becomes a case of, let's weigh the information based on the information and not where it came from. Does the information benefit society? Yes or no. If it doesn't, then maybe we shouldn't be using it. If it does, well, in what ways does it benefit? And weigh those as well. And I'm not talking about weighing it against religious values. I'm talking about weighing it against societal values, in terms of does it benefit society in a way that is mutually beneficial for the majority people, not for their beliefs, but for their health, for their physical lives, for their crops, for their money markets, for their industry, something of that nature. Just because your religion says that I can't add 1 + 1 to get 2 doesn't mean that 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2.
Yes. Okay. I agree there. And funny you should bring up this point. I was reading in the Toronto Metro yesterday or the day before about the idea of robots, right? Where the concept of science says that cognitive thought is nothing more than electronic stimuli placed between the neurons in the brain, which causes the recording of information, which blah 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 blah. Long story short, download your brain into a robotic avatar.
Mm, the question of that becomes, if you download your brain into a robotic avatar, do you lose the ability to reprogram yourself? Because that is the beauty of the human brain. You can reprogram yourself through various means, whether it's through self-hypnosis, whether it's through taking on a religious belief that's different from the religious belief you had before, or even dropping it altogether. Not a bad idea in my mindset.
Wait, just even being exposed
to different cultures.
Wait a second. Dropping religion or dropping the brain? Because the two totally different things that start happening.
Well, it depends on the person. And some people, you may want to take the brain out of the head, drop it on the floor, kick it around a few times, put it back in, and get it kickstarted.
I know a couple people like that. Okay, anyway, going on.
But the point is that the human brain has the ability to reprogram itself. If you put yourself in a robotic brain, does it have that same capability, or does it lose it? Because if it loses it, you are now stuck in the type of thought processes that you last had, the mentality that you last had. You have no room to grow. You will become stagnant. You are now a true robot because you are a slave to the last paradigm that your brain took on.
And that's it. That's
everything.
That's a very good point. I thought it was interesting because in this particular article, they were postulating the idea of a murder trial of a victim that hadn't been killed. And here's how it went. Very simply, the individual went through the process that they call robotic immortality, basically downloading the brain into a robotic avatar, which, yeah, if you really want to put it, basically makes you immortal because you can change it, you can move it from place to place, you can switch out the parts and carry on, right? However, here was the interesting part, is that the person that the doctor that was monitoring this robot, or technician, or both, if you really want to get interesting, adjusted the person's personality by hacking their OS, right? But didn't really change anything core other than the fact of made the person a little bit more submissive, a little more subjective to suggestion. But the fictional court battle was about literally personality murder, where the person has been effectively removed from being a person now. They have been controlled, they have been tampered with to such a degree that they are no longer them. They are now someone else.
Those kinds of concepts have been addressed over and over again, thanks to Isaac Asimov.
Oh, God, yes.
As well as Pierce Anthony and his wife. His wife wrote a book. Ghost in the Shell, the anime.
Yep.
Yeah, and plus there was also, oh God, what the hell was his name? Gage, I think it was, who had the steel rod got shot through his skull.
Oh, the guy who had the personality disorder. Well, you did read, there was an article where, I'm not sure if it was just one person or several people, but they were trying to go back and really trace his life through the means of true documentation of its time, and they're finding out that a lot of the stuff that they thought they knew about him, that was written about him, wasn't accurate, and that there was actually other more accurate information listed that showed that it was as less severe and that it was potentially that later on, in later years of life, at a period of time following after the accident, that he seemed to have kind of calmed down a little bit, I guess you would say. You know, basically what more current time frame tests have shown, where somebody had maybe damaged part of their right side of their brain and their left side of the brain picked up a little bit, picked up the slack. And so that's what they were saying about up here with his damage up here, that the records hint that he mellowed out from his wild mood swings later on in life, and that would indicate that the possibility of other parts of his brain taking over for the lack of that function. The human brain is amazing in how it can compensate.
True. I don't specifically remember. I didn't go looking him up, so I don't remember the stories on that one. Got a couple of people who were listening and watching, and again, thank you. Prolucifer, First off, great name. Thank you. Very nice to have you over here. And depending as to whether or not you're involved with it, good luck with that statue over in Oklahoma. I don't know if you know about that one. We'll talk about that one another time. That will be a topic.
Oklahoma.
That's not now. However, Viola, who's also posed a question, and this ought to be interesting. Viola says, I'm supposed to do a 20-minute short film for class. Any ideas, guys? I'm currently stoned and trying to figure something out and stumbled upon this. Well, there is actually something that you could do that actually ties into this. Something that you might find interesting. Something that happened out of Australia. Australia had a group called the Australian Vaccination Network. And they were, according to themselves, supposed to be the ones who were giving out the information that says vaccinations are actually dangerous, they have all these bad side effects, they are not proven, they're not tested, and people shouldn't be doing them, and were trying to pass themselves off as being the skeptical word for the country and effectively the world. And then they were taken to task. And the HCCC in Australia, which is the group that basically oversees all these groups and finds out, you know, are you actually telling the truth? They got involved. They sued. Well, there was a suit. There was a finding of fault and fact. And one of the things that they said was the following. Quote, the Australian Vaccination Network's purpose is to provide information against vaccination in order to balance what it believes is the substantial amount of pro-vaccination information available elsewhere. The information should not be read as medical advice, and the decision about whether or not to vaccinate should be made in consultation with a healthcare provider. Loosely speaking, what they claimed they were doing was not what they were doing. They were giving out advice and were not medically trained individuals. They were giving out fear advice, and subsequently, the name of the group, Australian Vaccination Network, was changed by court order. So they are now known as the, let me see what it is now, they are now calling themselves the Australian Vaccination Skeptics Network, so that they can keep the same AVN.org website. So they've basically hyphenated Vaccination Skeptics. So, you know, to keep their costs down, apparently.
By the way,
they're still apparently doing their thing.
If you let us know what class this is for, whether it's just a film class or a science class or whatever, we might also be able to give you an alternative idea. But, you know, we all come from varied backgrounds.
Yep. And Rithi, you were about to say?
Yeah, I was about to say, Pro Lucifer, no, it's not a joint in my hand. It's a cigarette, actually. I don't touch any form of recreational drug of any type whatsoever.
What do you think you're smoking?
I think I am smoking a...
Nicotine is a narcotic.
You're right.
It's addictive. Well, it produces a high of a sorts, although I will admit that the marijuana high actually produces a change in the brain brainwaves that are similar to meditation, hence the calming effect for most people.
I like to think I like to take a note from my most favorite sage of all times, who is Robin Williams, and he says, did you remember the Olympics when the Canadian snowboarder was tested for drugs and they wanted to take away his gold medal because he tested true for marijuana? He goes, there are many things that marijuana does. It enhances sights, sounds, sensations, but you are definitely not fucking empowered.
Yeah, and don't give them to your animals because they're not that high up on the food chain to begin with.
Yeah, it's true. And Viola, since you're doing a film class and you can do pretty much any genre, how about this? See about doing something that's going to stand out, something that's going to be different. Most of the people who are in a film class are doing it for the aesthetics. Try to do something different. See if you can produce for yourself a 20-minute news piece as if it were like 60 Minutes here in the United States or something like that with information that you could actually put together. Yes, Rith?
There's some, actually, speaking of that, since it's a film class that you're doing of any genre that you want, and especially keeping it close to the topics that we're discussing tonight, there's a series of short animations that you may want to look at on newgrounds.com that deal specifically, the best one I saw was Lucky Day Forever. And basically what that is it's a societal psychological push where society says you have to fit within a certain mold to be effective in society and to be successful in life. Really, really good animation, very, very well done, and the story and concept behind it is very good. Things like that might be something you might want to take a look at to be able to draw some kind of inspiration or some kind of direction with relation to what you want to do for your class. Animations are, as a film, very involved with the technical aspect of how to do things. But when you're talking about doing things like just video, where you're doing like camera work and stuff like that, there's a lot you can play around with to make work. But I really, really suggest give it a shot using taking a look at Newgrounds.
The other thing is,
good luck.
The other thing is just one final piece of advice. If you're going to do something, a topic that has two sides to it, and that's almost any topic you do, make sure you present both sides as best you can. Now, you have to, if it's a 20-minute film, believe it or not, that's actually a lot of time to present two sides. The key points, a little bit of in-depth information on both. End it with a question. Don't side with either side. Actually end it on a question. Present the case for both. And what that will do is that will show your instructor that you know how to get people to become interactive with that which they observed or watched or read or listened to. And that actually can, in some cases, earn you extra credit. Or at least extra consideration, because you've caused something that is encouraging people to interact with you or your piece.
So see how that plays out for you. And it looks like we may actually have you now at this point, Joe.
Hey, Joe. You look like you're coming from a freaky movie.
I know. I was like, who the hell is this?
It's like, dude, if you see a circle on your screen, run.
Well, really all I'm getting right now is the little blue man icon. I see some of your guys' video stream in the corner, but it's not really showing me much anything else. I'm on my netbook now, so video is now available.
Yep, it's low grain, same as what Adrodon's is, but we've got you, don't worry about it, and even if you're not seeing us, it's working well enough. And Viola, thank you, as a matter of fact. You could have been doing pretty much anything tonight, and getting high and hanging out with us, hey, you know, that's cool. And
Because I got high.
And in all seriousness, and I'm saying this speaking for the collective, best of luck, in all seriousness, doing something in the arts is not an easy thing to get recognized for, because to paraphrase from somebody else, it's all been done before one way or another. So if you're going to do it the best that you possibly can, no matter what it is. Take your time with it. Do it well. You want to really find out how nuts it can be? If you don't already know about him, and for shame on you if you don't, look up Ray Harryhausen. You want to find somebody who knows their shit, or did? Ray Harryhausen is one of the damned best there's ever been, and probably ever will be on that.
So speaking of woo-woo,
Yes. So, yes, getting back to the putting nasty stuff in you to make you better. That is effectively what vaccinations are. Yes, you're putting either specific chemicals in order for the body to get trained to better handle stuff, or, and this is where the reason why we won't have a show next week, you could be putting some really nasty chemicals, poisons, into your body in order to try to get rid of something that's even nastier. I'm specifically talking about cancer treatments.
Chemo.
The chemotherapy is nasty. There is no two ways about it. And like I said, that's part of the reason why we will not have a show next week. Next week marks 9 years since my wife died from the cancer that she had, angiosarcoma. Nasty. Nasty stuff. And what some people go through for trying to get rid of it is almost, if not worse, sometimes. That's part of the reason why there are a lot of people who just, after a while, just say, you know what, it's too much. It's just too damned much. And decide that they just want to, you know, do pain management and let it play out its course.
I had a coworker who, he lost his wife to angiosarcoma. And at first, the treatment made it go away. And they thought all was well. And then it came back. And the second time around, in the middle of treatments, his wife said, you know what? No. Just give me some pain medication and let's go enjoy life. And that's what she did. And she spent, I don't know how many months it took for her to pass on, die before, you know, between the time that she stopped the treatments and the time she wound up in the hospital. I do know that there was a period where they had 3 really good months of going out and doing all sorts of stuff together and whatnot. And, but the last 3 weeks was basically her in a medically induced coma until her body just gave up. And that was the end of it. I remember meeting her about 2 weeks before she went into the hospital. She was she had the oxygen thing around her nose. And, you know, she and I talked, and I hadn't known at the time what was going on. I can really miss a lot of details. I'm really good with machines. I'm not so good with people. It just never have been. So she and I talked. I cried. I told her that, you know, I'd never forget her as long as I live, that she will always live on in my memories. And I thanked her to her face for her sharing that wonderful smile with me, you know, all the times that we've spent time together. And that is what I will remember most about her. You know, and that made her smile. You know, I didn't say anything religious. I didn't know if she was or wasn't. But I made her smile before she passed on. And I feel good about that, you know?
Yeah, and that's arguably one of the nicest things that you can do sometimes, because what this stuff does for you is it kills your sense of taste and your smell, and you feel nasty in your old skin, and you smell weird things and you don't want to eat and you don't want to drink and you, which gets to be nuts. Joe, we still got you at this point, or did you want to chime on that?
It kind of comes down to whether or not you can call that living anymore.
There is a
significant difference between living and surviving.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And it's a painful line to try and have to decide on which way you're going to go on that. Rithi, I don't know if you wanted to hit on this one at all. I know you're busy doing stuff over there at the same time too.
Making dinner from the look of it.
I'm just getting my coffee.
Cup of coffee. All right.
He needs the caffeine.
I got a Keurig sitting beside me, so why not use it?
Nice. Thank you. You're number one, man. Number one in my opinion.
Actually, I had one of my coworkers. I just spent the last year, basically it was my boss. I had to take over her position for the last year, due to the fact that she was diagnosed with breast cancer. So she went through the entire chemo rounds and everything else. And I mean, this woman was a freaking champ. We hear all the, you know, all the sadness that comes with that comes with the discussion topic of cancers and stuff like that, especially when we talk about medicine. But I mean, when she told me that she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she hauled me into the office and I thought I'd done something wrong. Which usually prefaces every conversation I have with, "What did I do this time?" Right? however, or "What did I break?"
You use that a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do use that a lot. But the funny thing is that, you know, after we had the discussion, she said, "Listen, you're gonna be doing my job while I'm gone, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, call me up if you got any problems or anything like that." Originally, she was supposed to be out of the mix for about 8 months, which then extended to 9 months, which then extended to a year. And, you know, all the while I'm losing my mind because I'm doing her job and she's not just good at her job. She's freaking amazing, right? To step into those shoes with zero experience and zero training was definitely
daunting.
Well, was it her choice to put you in her shoes?
Yes.
Then that should also tell you that somebody felt that you were fully capable of doing what she did.
Which is why I'm going on course on Monday. I'm going for my promotionary course on Monday. I'm going from my Master Corporal's course to my Sergeant's course.
Very nice.
Good
which
luck on that.
Cool and all. But the funny thing is that we were sitting there one day and we're in the office before she starts undergoing the chemo treatments, and she goes, Riddy, come here. What's up? Right. So I come over to her workstation, and I'm sitting there, and I come around the corner and I get a full view of the screen, and she's looking at all these different sets of hair, and I'm like, "Huh?" She goes, "Well, the military pays for me to be able to get two wigs, right?" I was like, "Oh, okay." She's like, "Well, I've already selected the first wig, which is going to be as closely resembling my hair as I have right now, you know, before I lose it all." Right? I'm like, "Hey." Right? And she goes, "But I'm having trouble trying to figure out what I want for my second wig." I'm like, she's like, "I need some advice." I was like, "Well, okay.
Bright pink with yellow polka dots.
Wait for it." I was like, "Well, what's your victory lap?" She's like, "What?" I was like, "What's your victory lap? Everybody's got a victory lap that they have in mind for when they kick the ass right off this, right?" And she's like, "I never really thought about that." I said, well, when does your treatment end?" She goes, "Well, it ends on this date." I was like, "Oh, really?" She's like, "Yep." I was like, "Here, let me see your computer for a second." She's like, "Okay." So I go in. The day she finishes chemo, there's a Bon Jovi concert. And she's a huge Bon Jovi fan. Like, I mean, retarded Bon Jovi fan. As in, she could have a PhD in Joviism, right? Simply because of the fact that she's been able to ascertain in her thesis that no matter where you are, at any point in time during the day, there is always a Bon Jovi song playing.
Somebody's watched too much PCU.
Playing in Scotland.
Yeah, that was exactly my thought.
Playing up in Scotland. He starts clapping his hands, and he says, "Every time I clap my hands, a child in Africa dies." And someone in the back shouts, "Oh, stop clapping your hands, you bastard!"
But the funny thing is I'm sitting there, and she's like, "Bon Jovi. That's going to be my victory lap." And she immediately goes and opens up Microsoft Word and goes, and immediately starts this. "Good day, Mr. Jovi." Click. And she starts writing a letter. Right? I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Well, if I got cancer, I might as well use it to my advantage." I was like, "Are you serious? Are you seriously writing a letter to Bon Jovi's tour concert for what purpose?" She's like, "I want backstage tickets." What's wrong with you?
Shameless.
No shame. Right? No shame.
And I'm like, well, all right, if you're going to go to a Bon Jovi concert and you're going to do this as your victory lap, you need to get yourself some, like, black with purple stripe, frickin' blue Twisted Sister motherfucking wig going on there. You're going to show up at that concert, you're going to rock out like you're 19. Right? She's like...
And some double-sided duct tape, that way she can keep the wig on when she's headbanging.
No, she wanted to throw it on stage at Jovi. Everybody else is throwing their panties, she wanted to throw her wig.
Well, actually, what she could do is she could put the wig in the panties and then throw it on stage.
That would be, you know what my comment would be to that? You need a weed whacker on this.
So wrong.
See, no. Bats come out of there.
But this is the kind of woman that I work for, right? Like, she kind of looks at, like when she told me she had cancer, I'd already lost family members to cancer before. So immediately I'm like, oh shit, you know, is there anything I can do? What, you know, anything and everything you need, you let me know and I'll make it happen. And she's like, I got cancer, I'm not dying. I was like, wait, what? Isn't that kind of what cancer does? She's like, yeah. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go get absolutely trashed, and I'm going to dry heave so hard, I'm just going to puke it out of my system. I was like, did you just tell me that you're going to, like, death choke freaking cancer? She's like, yeah. I'm like, wow.
That works better than
T-Bone.
So allow me to get this straight. Her plan to defeat cancer, aside from medical help, was to drink it into submission?
Yeah. Duh. We're Canadian.
Okay. Just checking.
Dude, I'm Irish, Italian, Polish, and Russian. If I get cancer, I'm going to eat and drink that bastard into submission. And then I'm going to stir fry it.
At least she didn't say she was going to pull its hockey jersey up over its head and start throttling it in the guts.
Whoa.
Now, see, the way that you guys are talking about this, by the way, and this two pieces. One, as far as the wigs are concerned, you should really tell her that if she really wants to have the right look, she needs to find the one that's labeled MacGyver and just go right from there. That will do it.
MacGyver hair.
Gruber!
Now, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
Wait a minute. Does the MacGyver wig come with a Swiss Army knife over here, a paper clip up over here, and a potato over here so that you can build your own thermonuclear reactor?
No, it only comes with a paper. It was actually created from the Swiss Army knife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it only comes with a paper clip, stick of gum, and a rubber band.
I can build a fusion reactor out of that one. We can get into the Kerbal Space Program.
We have to talk about that one another night. Not tonight.
Yeah, let's not talk about that tonight because.
Or how about that wonderful hairdo that is worn by Amish Wolverine?
Look.
Amish Wolverine.
Yeah, can we?
We'll have to tell you about that one later.
I have to say that Steve met with a bit of an accident.
Oh no!
Wait a minute. Who's Steve?
Steve Kerman.
I'll explain later.
We'll talk about
one of your characters in the Kerbal Space Program.
Yes, it is.
So this is like Kerbal Space Program is kind of like the space simulator of Sims.
Sort of, yeah. We'll make that another piece for another night. I want to share this with everybody before we move on from this topic. This is from a webcomic known as XKCD.
Oh, God.
If you want to look this up, XKCD, the name of this one is called Lanes. And it starts off the two characters saying, so are you guys out of the woods? We don't know. Well, did the treatment work? We don't know. I always assumed that when you got cancer, they gave you a prognosis, then treated you, and at the end of the treatment, either you beat it or you died. And I knew something, sometimes it recurred, which I assumed meant back to square one. But that turned out to be not quite right. Once most cancers spread out into your body, they're incurable. If you were 10-year prognosis, 60%, that means a 40% chance that some cancer will slip past the treatment and get out. So they kill all the cancer they can, find, and then you're a survivor, but your odds are still 60%. They can't scan for individual cancer cells. The only way to know if it worked is to wait for tumors to pop up elsewhere. If you go enough years without that happening, then you were in the 60%. And often the first sign is a cough or bone pain. So you spend the next 5 or 10 years trying not to worry, that every ache and pain is the answer to the question, did I make it? Man, fuck cancer. Seriously. Now, the graphic at the end of this is a representation of breast cancer treatment and survival. Starting out from 1 year out to 6 years. How early you find in the body. And the earlier you find it, the far better your chances of surviving to the 60-year plus point is. But the longer you end up having to find it, well, you can see where those off-ramps go.
Now, what's the name of the guy who writes XKCD? I forget his name, but the guy's an actual mathematician. This guy is smart. He's actually building this off of true statistical, well, whether he's using the actual specific numbers or the rounded up percentages, he's still using statistical data to actually generate these things.
Wait, wait, wait. Somebody's making a webcomic with...
This guy's actual, nuts for math.
Actual facts rather than opinions?
The guy is a nut job for math. I have seen some of the stuff he's come up with for math and equations and quotations. And sure, some of them he manipulates to make them into a joke. Because you can actually, if you've done any form of, you know, like I did take calc. I didn't finish it, but I do remember some of my early calculus, and I saw some things where he did little twists here and there to make it funny, but then you could also see where he did the real deal math. And if it is a he, I don't know who writes XKCD. I just know whoever it is, they do have math in their background, and they have a lot of it.
They're friggin' brilliant. They're really, really brilliant. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring that one up is because my situation with my wife, she was diagnosed with, as stated, properly diagnosed a couple of weeks after our daughter was born. And, you know, Rithi has had the opportunity of actually meeting her in person. Joey has actually had the opportunity also. And when it was diagnosed at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute here in Buffalo, for them, it was one in a million to find, to give you an idea as to just how rare it is. And at the time, and this was going to 2002, October, 5-year prognosis was 20%. Meaning, if you go by what you just read here on the webcomic, 20% of people will be alive, in whatever term that might be, at 5 years. Meaning, odds were not good. And for her, it was almost three years. And we lost her the 22nd of May, 2005, at 7 p.m. So every year, I go back to Roswell Park on that day and bring the nurse's station dinner, homemade. Usually it'll be either lasagna. No, I do not homemade. I do not make the noodles homemade. Screw that noise. Or I will do chicken curry, Japanese chicken curry with rice, because
I can give you a recipe to make the ricotta cheese yourself at home, and what that'll do over the store bought brand is it'll make it less watery when you make it.
Well, actually, considering I don't boil the noodles, I need all the liquid I can get. But that's
oh okay laziness. Okay, I didn't know you were doing that. I'm sorry.
It's all right, but and that's part of the reason why we're not going to have a show next week, because during that weekend I will also be doing a 36-hour radio stream online for a fundraiser for RPCI. So if you'd like to find out a little bit more about that, follow me here on G+, on Twitter, Facebook, all under the name Shujin Tribble, and you can kind of help along with that.
Will it start Wednesday night?
No, it's going to be starting next Friday. And okay. I'll be running for 36 hours.
Okay.
Which should prove to be interesting. Again, I wasn't able to make it last year. I just conked out. I will make it one way or another. In any event, this is also part of the reason why, you know, you put nasty stuff into your body in order to kill something that's nastier. I mean, you put poison into your radioactive poison in some cases in order to get rid of the stuff that's going to end up killing you.
Now, at the same time, we've made some extreme progression with how to target the areas of the body. Because the biggest problem when you put a chemical in the body that's designed to kill a foreign substance, it has a tendency to kill other things too. And when you have a circulatory system, like all humans do, it tends to spread out. There is a young girl who figured out, and she won some kind of award for this, she figured out that for certain kinds of tumors and cancers, you can inject them with molecules of gold. And for certain kinds of treatment, when they inject the treatment is attracted to the ionization that naturally occurs in, well, I forget what the attraction was. I'd have to reread the article, and that means I'd also have to refine it. But what it does is somehow the gold attracts the chemicals to stay close despite the system, despite the human body system, so that it stays there longer, giving it a better chance to kill that which is cancerous or tumorous.
Now, there's also another one that was incredibly surprising to me. A ham radio guy figured out that if you have the carbon nanotubes cut to a specific length, well, not cut, but I mean manufactured to a specific length, they will resonate at a specific frequency. And if you then paint those in a specific area in cells, on cells, you can then induce them to vibrate sympathetically against electromagnetic radiation. Similar to the way that a microwave oven makes water molecules vibrate faster to heat them up, radio waves can be used to excite those tubes and heat up specific locations with much, much lower power than would be necessary than putting a poodle in a microwave oven, for crying out loud.
They also found out a secondary use for the nanotubes, where if they made a nanotube string, they could insert it into somebody who had a brain tumor that was too big to operate. Because what most people don't know is when they cut out a brain tumor, they're cutting out part of the healthy brain that goes along with it. And it's just because our technology hasn't gotten to the level where we could go cell by cell and extricate the tumor. So what they figured out was is if you put one end of the carbon nanotube into the tumor and another into a petri dish with a medium that supports tumorous life, the tumors will actually start to travel down the nanotube into the dish and actually shrink its mass, thereby potentially making it a treatment to be used before removing the tumor. So that way you can get out as much of it as you can in a specific period of time, and also by reducing the amount of human good tissue you have to cut out of the brain.
Joey?
Yes?
One second, Rith. Joe, does this sound suspiciously like replacing leeches with carbon nanotube now to you? Because that's what it sounds like to me.
No, there was a guy who was doing an experiment with this, actual doctor and scientist.
I know, but I'm just picturing this.
We're just making a satirical comment is all.
Yes, exactly.
We're not criticizing the story or your telling of it. It's just...
Yeah, because this actually came out of a medical journal. This wasn't just somebody saying, hey, look what I heard. And it was like, no, they actually documented the process and all that fun stuff. But they haven't applied it yet. They haven't set up a system to apply it. It's just a potential treatment. Now,
can't wait to see this one. Rithi.
Here's something that I thought was really, really interesting. The you know how some how you have a keystone discovery that occurs, and there's a 1,000 discoveries that occur after that, right? just because of that one discovery, immediately people go, aha, a clue.
Yeah, bridges off of it.
Yep. So the young lass who discovered that the idea that you could basically tag cancer with cancerous cells with auric, right, made a great discovery doing that. The funny thing is that gold or auric, you know, on our periodic tables will is very, very easy to quantize, i.e. kick off a photon. The funny thing is that to be able to quantize it, all you have to do is use a light charge. And by a light charge, you could literally do electronic stimulation throughout the body rather than using a radioactive isotope to basically make cancer cells light up like flares in the body. You could do that while undergoing an X-ray, a full-body X-ray, to literally pinpoint which cells in the body are actually cancerous rather than doing the thermal nuclear attack that generally happens with relation to chemotherapy, because it's basically cool.
Freaking amazing. So much of this stuff is just so science fiction.
But I just don't know if anybody's actually done it. Like, that's the thing, right? You know, I mean, if they've actually successfully in the body tagged cancerous cells with gold, then the logical science from that, or the rational science from that, would be use freaking electrostimulation to be able to light them up like flares.
Well, see, Rith, that's where you and I were talking earlier about, you know, ethics in the science and medical community.
Yeah.
What the Nazis did versus you know, somebody going, oh, hey, what's this do? Well, you know, when it comes to actually trying these tests on people who are in these situations that they're dying and whatnot, where are the ethics in this? You know, is it ethical to perform this kind of technical experiment or medical experiment on somebody when they haven't done enough non-human trials, or has it even not even made an animal trial yet?
You're right.
And that's one of the things our society has accepted as a kind of a de facto standard, which is, first we test in a lab experiment, then we test on a little white rat or whatever. But, of course, you know, you've got PETA and the rest of them who go, oh, but the poor white rat. And it's like, I'm sorry, I would much rather test it on the rat and the monkey than on 50 million human beings, or 50,000 human beings, or 5,000 human beings. Because, you know what, I am species-centric. My species first, because I am part of this species. And I eat that which does not eat me first. So the way I see it, I'll test it out on the hamburger first.
And I agree with you. I agree with you there. And
there is a state that just made politics that they're trying to pass a bill, or they just passed a bill or whatever, saying if you've run out of options, you're allowed to try experiments that have not yet been FDA approved or something like that, and I forget which state it was. I saw it in passing, and it's relatively new in terms of the article being published.
That's where I was going to go with that, right? Is because when you talk about the ideas of cancer, specifically in things like cancer or in dementia or in neurological disorders, things like that, right, that will eventually claim the life of the individual. Being told I have no options, why am I not allowed to say, you know what, I've heard about this, what can you tell me?
And that's the case of there was a little boy who had leukemia. And his, either he or his family or his doctor found out about an experiment that was going on that had just reached the human trial stage, but you had to meet certain criteria. You had to have exhausted all possible other treatments. All of them had to have failed. And that's what happened in this kid's case. And he was able to be transported to an area of the U.S. where the experiment was allowed to proceed, meeting all that criteria and volunteer status. And my understanding was the last I read, it had worked. The leukemia was gone for several years. I do not know if it ever came back or not, because I don't remember reading a follow-up to that story.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Rithi, go ahead.
The thing is that generally you're not gonna see a follow up on that. It's very much the same thing as the only news you ever hear is bad news, because bad news gets ratings. But
news like that would
let him go.
Be big.
Oh, you're right. Remember, a number of years ago, they came up with the idea of being able to have HIV and AIDS treatment drugs produced on such a low cost that it could actually be introduced to the drinking water without any complications or any cross contaminations with chlorination or any of that nature, right? And then it just disappeared. Any of the information about it just disappeared. No follow-up, no nothing. And this is where I start getting very skeptical about a lot of things. Because if you think about the logic behind it, right? How expensive is the treatment for something like AIDS, HIV?
Extremely.
Yeah, so we're talking a multi-billion dollar industry that came up with the idea.
I am going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. My uncle actually did some work for a pharmaceutical company. I think it was just the technical aspect of it.
Yeah.
But he was actually watching how some of the things progressed. And while the company he worked for had made one major drug that was really beneficial, they also had 50 other projects that were completely and utterly failing, and they were trying every single possible outcome on these other projects to see if they would ever produce something that would work. So the one drug was paying for these other 50 that were in the works.
Oh, yeah,
and
fair.
That's why the price of that drug had not dropped in 5 years.
And that's this is where I try to me backpedaling a little bit, where I say, it's not that I think that these companies are evil or sadistic or anything like that, but there are two major discoveries in the last 10 years that make me very skeptical about the ethics and morals as a shield, not as general practice.
Okay.
Number one is the idea of waterborne curatives, right? Things that don't interfere with our regular ability to consume water or anything like that, but actually delivers a benefit, right? In this particular case, I'm talking about this discovery. The second thing is hydrogen fuel cells. Hydrogen fuel cells, I remember one vehicle hitting production that was using hydrogen fuel cells. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, hydrogen fuel cell when it's combusted actually produces H2O as a byproduct. We're talking pure H2O. We're not talking
more pure than distilled water.
Yeah, we're talking literally elemental H2O.
Pure on a molecular level.
Yeah.
And if you were to drink it, you would spit it out because it has absolutely no taste, and the human body is not designed to handle that.
That's right. But the thing to that is that if hydrogen fuel cells actually made mainstream, right? It's the same thing with electric motors, but electric motors still require the use of fuels to be able to generate that electricity, which is kind of interesting because I really don't like big oil, right? Because basically in this particular case, you're looking at a discovery that had the same competitive output that gasoline uses, with a renewable resource being redistributed into the environment over the course of however many people are driving everywhere, right? The funny thing is that literally that one vehicle hit the market, and then literally 3 months later, all trace of it disappeared.
Yeah, that's something that we should really see about making as a topic sometime in the near future. because there's a whole piece of this. We're running really close onto our cutoff time. So, Joe, I'm going to give you kind of the last piece on this one before I close this up with something else.
Well, I'm just a little... I could go on and talk about what was discussed before, but honestly, if we get into animal testing, that in itself is another show entirely.
Yeah, agreed.
Same with, you know, the hydrogen car and stuff like that. But I'm surprised we've gotten this far into the show without discussing stuff like the hocus pocus of the medical industry, namely stuff like supposed herbal supplements, herbal cures, stuff that harkens back to, like, you know, Chinese folk medicine.
Well, how about Reiki? What do you guys know about Reiki?
Well, no. We don't have enough time to go into those pieces just yet, but I actually do have something to cap us off with about that. So was there anything else at this point that you wanted to close us off with so far, Joe?
Not really. I do apologize. I haven't contributed too much between trying to get this dang thing to work and just not wanting to cooperate with me. But next time I'm on here, things should be a little more stable.
Totally understandable. It's all right. And the thing with this type of show is that I have a general idea as to where I want to talk into. And generally speaking, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. So we don't necessarily hit stuff in a concise fashion. We typically kind of meander through the topic. And like I said, at the top of the show, sometimes the journey is more impressive and more important than the destination itself. However, this time I'm going to end us with a destination. www.1023.org.uk. This is a website for the 1023 campaign that was started by the Merseyside Skeptics over in England. And it's the idea of them showing off what homeopathic medicines, and I use the term very loosely, do for you. They actually work as a very good diet pill because they help you lose weight, specifically from your purse and very little else. The Merseyside Skeptics will have the 1023 campaign, and it's something that James Randi, the amazing Randi, has done on many an occasion in front of lots and lots and lots of people year after year after year. He will get himself a bottle of homeopathic sleeping pills, open it up, rip off the seal, take out the cotton, because that's actually will hurt you, and will invite people to join him in downing an entire bottle of homeopathic sleeping remedies in order to show that this stuff doesn't do anything.
Dude, that guy's got to be constipated the next day, though.
You know what? With everything that he does, who in the hell knows at this point? But the bottom line of it is, the Merseyside Skeptics guys have shown that homeopathic treatments, medicines, whatever you want to call them, don't work. If you do the research on what goes into them, quite literally, you will find out that the way that it works doesn't make any sense. What you end up with inside of a bottle is, if you're lucky, a handful of molecules, if even one, of the original whatever it is that was supposed to help treat you. You know, and that's not science. That's doing the math. Joe.
Well, one of the things I've seen a lot with this is people will argue, well, even if it's not doing anything to help, it's certainly not doing anything wrong. And if it's making people think that it's helping, then isn't the placebo effect a good thing? No. No, it is not, because here's the reason why. If you're focusing on taking something that doesn't work, but you think it works, you're being told it works, and it doesn't, then you are taking valuable time and energy away from working towards something that does make a difference. So and the placebo effect, no, it is most certainly not a good thing. It is not a little white lie. It is a complete waste, and nothing is worse than wasted time. Because money, you can always get more. Time, you have a finite amount. It is the most valuable resource you have.
And all of the studies that have been shown for homeopathic treatments and remedies and such have all come up flat. If they've shown anything that could be even close to be interpreted as positive, there have been methodological problems with the studies. There have been exclusions. There have been problems with double blinding not being done, with data being specifically excluded, small sample sizes, sometimes in the teens of people in order to get, sometimes self-reporting, which, as we know full well, doesn't work because people will tell you what you want to hear and not document the truth. Maybe because they want to, maybe because they want to feel more important, or maybe just because they had a bias that they didn't even realize they were using. But in any event, stuff that is in homeopathic remedies on the store shelves, if you really want to try to figure out is it worth it, look at it. Look at the label. Do the homework to find out what does it say is inside of it. How many milligrams or micrograms or nanograms of something are actually in there? And then talk with somebody who has spent 12 years of schooling, 20 years of continuing schooling, in order to find out what's really happening. Go to a local college or university, ask a chemist on campus, what can you tell me about this kind of stuff?
I'd rather ask the pharmacist.
Or you could just ask your pharmacist, because my first job was working in a pharmacy. They know. It used to be, not too very long ago, if you were working in a pharmacy or a chemist, as others would call it, you had the raw ingredients and you had to build the tablets or build the capsules or build the syrups or build the salves yourself. Literally. Guys who know their jobs, guys who know the stuff, know full well. It's utter crap. And it's sold to the tune of billions upon billions of dollars, billions upon billions of pounds. It's not worth it. It truly is not worth it for exactly that reason.
Time. I've looked at the bottles of some of these homeopathic medicines, and they contain a lot of inert ingredients that do nothing. It's basically the suspension that you would put the medicine in, but none of the medicine. You're buying nothing.
There is one perfect example that Randy talked about, and I'm gonna put the camera on you while I'm talking about this, Rithi, because I think your reaction is probably going to be the best out of us all. The amazing Randy had described one set of homeopathic remedy, and I forget what it was supposed to be for. It was made from the liver of a duck. And doing the math, doing the actual science, they figured out that if you were to go by the construction methodology, you would be able to make enough capsules with one duck liver that it would encompass the volume of our solar system in pills.
I like to call this preparation H.
What a waste of foie gras.
But bottom line, folks, if you really want to go ahead and try the stuff out for anything, ask the people who know the science behind it all. Because science is nothing more than what happens when I do this. Does this work the way that I'm expecting it to? It does? Oh, that's boring. Move on. It's when a scientist looks at something and says, that's weird, when you find the new stuff. And that is the journey, far more important than the destination. I want to thank you all for having joined us this evening. This is going to be, like I said, it's going to be 2 weeks before our next show. So thank you for hanging out with us, and we're getting very close to our actual 90-minute mark. As always, I'd like to thank the panel. Unrenown Tech, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. And just remember, a lot of medicines are actually poisons in very small dosage. And if I'm lying, let God strike me dead right now. Oh, false alarm.
Nice enough, Thor is on our side. Joe, thank you very much for your time.
Problem?
God, that's creepy.
Wow, that looks horrible. I'm looking at this on both screens now because, you know, for some reason it does not want to play the video on the small screen. And wow, that is just, oh.
All you need is a light over your head.
I will figure.
Call yourself the divine.
I'll fix that later.
He just needs to, like, put a flashlight underneath his chin and go,
Rithi, thank you very much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. I just wanted to make sure that I leave off with everybody understanding that I spent the last 5 years building up an immunity to iocane powder.
For those of you that don't get that joke, shame on you. Really, really shame on you.
You look keep using up... that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Actually, it means exactly what I think it means. Look up iocane powder. And if you are at all worried about it, getting it in the U.S. Postal Service, don't worry about it. Nobody will know that it's there in the first place. So if you're going to get hit with it, you're going to get hit with it. There's not much that you can really do about it. Just don't drink any more red wine.
And never gamble with the Sicilian when life is on the line.
And never get into a land war in Asia.
Oh. Well, if only we had that advice a couple of years ago. Oh, wait, that movie came out in 87. I don't think he ever saw it.
In the meantime, rest well and dream of large women.
What you do in your time is your business. What you dream about is all up to Princess Luna. If you don't know that
he
reference,
wants no snow.
Anyway, as mentioned, we will be back in 2 weeks. So those of you that would like to give us some ideas as far as to the next theme ideas, please send them over to me, shujintriple@gmail.com. Feel free to comment on pretty much anything. If you want to find me on any of the major IM systems or social medias, you'll find me under that name. It's real, real tough to miss me. As always, it is truly a pleasure. It is my honor to be able to do this, and I sincerely hope that we all end up learning a little something when all is said and done. As always, I say goodnight for all of you. I say goodnight for my lady, because I am still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. Until the next time we get together, everyone, as always, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until that very next time we get together, good day.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.